Please come to order. Please call the roll.
Chair Mello has been excused. Vice Chair Beltran.
Here.
Ranking Member Tant.
Here.
Representative Amnesty.
Here.
Representative Bell has been excused. Representative Burfield. Representative Cross.
Here.
Representative Dunkley.
Here.
Representative Escamani.
Here.
Representative Esposito.
Here.
Representative Gonzalez-Pittman.
Present.
Representative Hawkins.
Here.
Representative Hinson has been excused. Representative Lopez. Representative Plasencia.
Here.
Representative Redmond.
Here.
Representative Schoaf. Here. Representative Temple.
Thank you, members, and by your presence, we have a quorum. Excuse me, sorry. Members, I'll ask you to please silence all cell phones. If there are any members of the public that wish to speak or provide testimony to the committee, please fill out that appearance card and pass it up to the dais. We have six bills on agenda today. However, at the sponsor's request, HB 515 will be temporarily postponed. We'll start with HB. Is Rep. Esposito here? Oh, there you are. Okay. We'll start with HB 465. Representative, you're recognized to present HB 465 relating to workforce education.
Thank you, Chair. HB 465 increases the cap on the Open Door grant from $3,000 to $9,000 per student and clarifies that a student is eligible to receive funding after all other federal and state financial aid, as well as any other private or public financial assistance is applied. That is the bill.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions on the PCS? Representative Escamani, you're recognized.
Thank you so much, Chair Beltran, and good to see you, Rep. I know we talked about this on the phone, but maybe we could just, for the members that might not be aware, you know, the current program, what has been appropriated so far and what's been spent, and maybe if you can address some of those issues.
You're recognized.
Thank you. So in fiscal year 2021-2022, $35 million was appropriated and only about $1 million was used. So some of the issues that we discussed earlier that we're trying to solve with this bill is accessibility. So for instance, a CDL driver's license course would fit within this program. The average cost is about $7,000. With a $3,000 cap, there's a $4,000 delta there. And we're asking people to essentially take almost 2 months off of work to upskill and reskill in order to get into these high wage jobs and really solve a problem that we're having in our state and our community with careers. And then on top of that, we're asking them to come up with another $4,000. So the goal of this bill is to be able to assist and provide that financial assistance so that we can help those students.
Representative Cross, you're recognized.
I had an identical question, so thank you, Chair.
Okay. Anybody else wishing to ask questions on the PC? Rep. Escamani, you're recognized.
Thank you so much. Could you speak a little more to the provision around, like, I believe colleges and technical centers would not be able to impose additional criteria to determine eligibility? You know, what's the motivation for that, and have there been barriers that you've seen? Maybe just speak to that more, too.
You're recognized.
Thank you. Yes, so we want to make sure that we protect the funding so that individual institutions can't put additional criteria on the students. Again, making sure that we're able to use the most funds that we can and make sure that they are being used for the intended purpose.
Ranking Member Tant, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I asked you this about the bill when we talked about it earlier. In respect to the, first of all, the use of the grant funding, I reached out to some of my colleges and universities, and they said that because if a student defaults, that they feel like they have to sue them to get recompensed, that they don't recommend the grant funding as much. So in addition to, so first of all, I know you told me the bill doesn't address that. Do you have any concerns about if we're raising the price of the grant to $9,000 and they have to pay for a third of it, about the affordability of the third?
You're recognized.
I'd love to talk to you more about that. What we're also changing in the bill is that private contribution, so specifically looking to have companies have the ability to help. I'm going to use CDL driver's licenses as another example again. There are companies who are willing to invest in students, so if they can come up with that third on behalf of the student, it's still coming from the private sector. It's not coming from additional state funding or federal funding, and we're still able to have students complete the program.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any further questions? Seeing no further questions, we'll move into public testimony. It looks like we have some appearance cards. We'll start with Christopher Strandberg, Americans for Prosperity, waving in support. We have Kevin Comer, Fleet Force Truck Driving School, waving in support. That is all the appearance cards. We are now in debate, members. Are there any members who wish to debate this PCS? Rep. Escamani, you're recognized.
Thank you so much, Chair. I just want to say that I think the change makes sense, and it is expensive for folks to transition, especially if you are a service worker, to get that CDL or some sort of advanced certification to change your economic situation and experience mobility. And so I think the change is good, and of course we should watch the appropriation to see as it grows in popularity, and hopefully we can promote it better. If we do need more money, then we would allocate that too. So, but I think the change does make sense. So thanks for bringing it forward.
Ranking Member Tant, you're recognized.
First of all, I want to say thank you for bringing this bill, and thank you, Mr. Chair. I do support it. I just ask you a few technical questions, and my colleges and universities do as well. So thank you.
Any further debate? Seeing none, you're recognized to close.
Thank you. Wave close.
Please call the roll on PCS for HB 465.
Representatives Amnesty.
Yes.
Beltran.
Yes.
Burfield. Cross.
Yes.
Dunkley.
Yes.
Escamani.
Yes.
Esposito. Yes. Gonzalez-Pittman.
Yes.
Hawkins.
Yes.
Lopez.
Yes.
Plasencia.
Yes.
Rudman.
Yes.
Schoaf.
Yes.
Tant.
Yes.
Temple.
By your vote, PCS for HB 465 is reported favorably. Congratulations. The next bill up is Representative Tuck presenting HB 1603. Representative, you are recognized to present HB 1603 relating to Okeechobee County.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a local bill that directs the Board of Trustees of the Internal Improvement Trust Fund to convey in fee simple to the Board of Trustees of Indian River State College property in Okeechobee County consisting of approximately 205.52 acres. And that is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Members, are there any questions on this bill? Are there any questions? No, seeing no questions, we'll move into public testimony. I see that we have Ken Pruitt from Indian River State College waving in support. Good to see you. Is anyone else public testimony? No. Okay, let's go into debate. Are there any members wishing to debate this bill? Okay, seeing no debate, Rep. Tuck, you're recognized to close.
Wave close.
Please call the roll.
Representatives Amnesty.
Yes.
Beltran.
Yes.
Burfield. Cross.
Yes.
Dunkley.
Yes.
Escamani.
Yes.
Esposito. Gonzalez-Pittman.
Yes.
Hawkins.
Yes.
Lopez.
Yes.
Plasencia.
Yes.
Rudman.
Yes.
Schoaf.
Yes.
Tant.
Yes.
Temple.
Yes.
By your vote, HB 1603 is reported favorably. Congratulations. Next up, we'll have HB 845, Collegiate Purple Star Campuses by Rep. Dunkley and Rep. Hunchowski. Rep. Hunchowski, you are recognized to explain HB 845, along with your other spot. I'm not sure if Dunkley is the prime, okay, or is the sponsor, and Panchofsky is the prime. Go ahead, Rep.
Thank you, Chair, for having me this afternoon and for the opportunity to present HB 45 relating to collegiate Purple Star campuses. And thank you to Ranking Member Tent as well and the subcommittee members for having me. So HB House Bill 845 sets guidelines for Florida college systems, institutions, state university, or career center to join the Collegiate Purple Star Campus Program. This program would allow for these campuses to self-identify as an institution that understands and respects the different needs of student veterans and students who are part of a military family. Those institutions who choose to join the program would be required to make several resources available to military students, such as a designated staff member as a military liaison, a page on their website with available resources to military families, a student-led transition program for military students, and priority course registration. That is the bill, Chair.
Thank you, Rep. Dunkley. Members, are there any questions on this bill? Seeing no questions, there is an amendment. You're recognized to explain the amendment.
Thank you, Chair. So the amendment, just Amendment 005207, clarifies the definition of a military student to include an active duty service member or veteran of any branch of the United States military, reserve component, or Florida National Guard.
Thank you. Are there any questions on this amendment? Seeing no questions, do we have public testimony? No public testimony on the amendment. We are in debate on the amendment. Is there anyone wishing to debate the amendment? Seeing nobody wishing to debate, you're recognized to close. On the amendment.
On the amendment, I'm going to waive close, Chair.
All in favor of the adoption of the amendment signify by saying yay.
Yay. Yay.
All those opposed say nay. Seeing no objection, the amendment is adopted. We are back on the bill as amended. We will now move into public testimony. I see that we have some public testimony. The first is Tony Lee, Florida Board of Governors, waiving an opposition. Is that in support or opposition? It says, It says wave in support. Sorry. the box is confusing. Okay. Bob Mayerson, Commissioner, City of Parkland, is waving in support. Got that right that time. Alice Kurse, Foundation for Florida's Future, waving in support. Alyssa Dines, Florida Department of Veterans Affairs, waves in support. And I think it says Million Thompson, Florida A&M University, is waving in support. That concluding public testimony, we'll move into debate. Are there any members wishing to debate this bill? Rep. Cross, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to commend you both on bringing this great bill forward. This is consistent with Florida being one of the most veteran and military-friendly states, and this just furthers our support of our military professionals and students, and I appreciate that you're wearing purple today as well.
Any further debate? Seeing no further debate, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to begin by thanking Representative Dunkley, not only for working on this, but also for her service to this country. This is, as Representative Cross so beautifully said, you know, just further showing Florida support for military veterans and their families. This is just the college version of what we had already passed in the Florida House for high schools. And the more we can support these families and family members who have given so much to this country we love so dearly, better off we'll all be. So thank you very much.
Kendall, please call the roll.
Representatives Amnesty.
Yes.
Beltran.
Yes.
Burfield. Cross.
Yes.
Dunkley.
Yes.
Escamani.
Yes.
Esposito. Gonzalez-Pittman.
Yes.
Hawkins.
Yes.
Lopez.
Yes.
Plasencia.
Yes.
Rudman.
Yes.
Schoaf.
Yes.
Tant.
Yes.
Temple.
Yes.
By your vote, HB 845 is reported favorably. Congratulations to both of you. We'll next go to PCS for HB 1247 by Rep. Temple. This is relating to effective access to student education. Rep. Temple, when you're ready, you're recognized to present PCS for HB 1247.
Thank you, Chair, Ranking Majority Member, and Committee. The EASE Tuition Assistance Program serves over 37,000 college and university students across the state. To be eligible, a student must be a resident, must be full-time, undergraduate student, attending an eligible, independent, nonprofit college or university. This bill is tying institution eligibility to performance against five statutory metrics. Those metrics are Pell Grant eligible access students that attend the college, the net cost per year after accounting for federal, state, and institutional aid, the percentage of students that graduate in 6 years, not 4 years like public universities, the percentage of students that return for a second year after their first year, and the fifth, percentage of students that obtain employment or continue their education after graduation. Chair, that is the bill.
Thank you, Rep. Temple. Members, are there any questions on this PCS? Any questions? Ranking Member Tant, you are recognized to ask a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Temple, thank you for reaching out to me about the bill. I appreciated that. I do have a few questions. Is there a glide path in here for the current schools and current students so that they can become compliant with this before this takes effect? I didn't see that, and I forgot to mention it to you.
No, ma'am. I'm not aware of a glide path. They had to submit their results already to DOE, so I'm not aware of a glide path.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions? Rep. Escamani, you're recognized.
Thank you so much. Good to see you, Representative. Yes. I know we talked about this before, but I know one of the concerns that have come from the EASE eligible schools is the lack of a ramp, because it looks like the way the bills are now is that students would just not be qualified to continue at their school pretty immediately. Could you maybe speak more to that and why we don't have some sort of off and on ramp?
You're recognized.
So this has been something that's been in the works for several years, and so the college has been notified about this process and to gear up and get ready for it. So they've had notice. They've had at least a minimum of 2 years, a little bit longer. They've been tracking this data. So it's been, from my understanding, there have been conversations that have been had up until this point. And to let you know, if you didn't see, there are 34 colleges. Of the 34, 27 qualify. Of the 27, 15 make it to that bonus funding. And to qualify, you have to have 3 out of 5. And then get the bonus funding. There's an additional marker that deals with workforce education and being employed in it.
Rep. Cross, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. Was wondering what the rationale was for having no funding for the Tier 3 universities or institutions rather than just a lower allocation, say $500 or $1,000.
You're recognized.
If you look at the percentages, in most cases, to get 3 out of 5, it's pretty attainable. And so some of the results or some of the percentages are appear to be low as far as to meet that threshold. And so the thought was, you know, given the 3 out of 5 opportunity and some of the things that are within your control, and sometimes they're not if a student doesn't come back, but felt like it was a good starting point to work with, but open to discussion.
Any follow-up? Okay. Rep. Dunkley, did you have a question? No? Okay. Ranking Member Tant, you have another question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In respect to the EASE program that was created in 1979, What are the concerns that we're trying to address with the bill?
You're recognized.
Like with any time you add metrics to anything, you're trying to improve the outcomes. And we want to improve the outcomes for our students, the graduation rate, employment rate. And so really to strongly encourage those that may not be meeting that metric right now to put some things in place to get to that point and to incentivize the colleges to do so.
Ranking Member Tent, you're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So for that graduation rate, do you have any, I know that the EASE program has created a lot of jobs and has had impacts and have had people. On that graduation rate, do you know how many of the institutions that are currently in the EASE program will not meet that, don't have the graduation rate you're looking for? How many institutions will this impact?
You recognize.
I can get that information to you. What I have committed to memory is the number that have made it and the ones that are making the bonus. But I have that information in my office, and I can get that back to you when I get back.
Any members having any more questions? Seeing no more questions, I will move into public testimony. I see that we have an appearance card from Bob Boyd from ICUF, an opponent of the bill, and you're recognized, sir.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. Members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Bob Boyd. I'm the president and CEO of ICUF. So these are the EASE eligible institutions. These are 30 nonprofit institutions in Florida. There's about 170,000 students. We produce about 20% of all the baccalaureate degrees in Florida and about half of all the graduate degrees. And that includes, I think, Representative Bell and Representative Temple, who are graduates of our schools, Southeastern University in Lakeland, which is a wonderful school. I just wanted to, first of all, just thank the members we've spoken to about alternatives that truly measure the performance of our institutions. So we met with Chair Leak, Chair Mello, Chair Schoaf, and Representative Temple, and I really want to thank them for listening to us about this issue. And I also want to tell Chair Schoaf we appreciate his budget proposal this morning, which shows a commitment to higher ed choice, which really this is similar to what we do in K-12. This is higher ed choice. The money follows the student. The money goes to the student, not to the institution. But according to our calculation, there's 5 ICUF schools that would lose EASE and over 3,000 students. And we are not afraid of accountability at ICUF at all. And let me just give you a couple examples about maybe how these metrics don't work, and there's some alternative metrics that could work. One of them is Hodges University. Hodges University is a workforce institution in Fort Myers that the average age of a student at Hodges is 35 years old. Their 6-year graduation rate is 15%. That's bad. That's horrible. But let's look under the hood a minute. So Hodges, 96% of its students are not counted in the graduation rate because they're either transfers or they're not first time in college fall semester. So if you have a rolling admission every month, those students are not counted, only the fall semester. So that metric of graduation rate isn't meaningful to Hodges. If a student graduates with a nursing degree at Hodges and comes from Polk State College, Polk State College gets the graduation rate percentage added to their percentage. So that's a good example, and just so you know the actual facts on Hodges, 88% of the students who are at Hodges graduate with a physical therapy degree that are in that program, 77% graduate with a BS in nursing, and 83% graduate with an MS in clinical mental health counseling. So in other words, those are completers that graduate but are not counted in graduation rates. So we hope that you all look at alternatives to measure, for example, completion rate versus graduation rate. Here's another good example. UM barely meets these metrics by 1 percentage point, and University of Tampa fails these metrics. These are 2 of the best schools in Florida. The reason they don't meet the metrics is, 1 is their tuition amount, 2 is their Pell-eligible students, but 3 is their placement rates are below 64%. But a lot of Tampa students leave the state after they graduate, students that don't even get EASE. And FETPIP, which is used to measure placement rate, does not capture out-of-state students. So if 50% of your students leave the state and they're not captured in your placement rate, that will show that that metric doesn't accurately capture the meaningful performance of University of Tampa. One last example is Jacksonville University. More than half of their students are connected to the military. They're called up for active duty. They're called up for reservist duty. They can't graduate in 6 years because of the nature of their student. So I would just ask you to look at these unique schools, look at their students. There's metrics that work for the ICUF schools, and we just need to get there and consider the alternatives. Another good thing I did want to say in conclusion is that, again, we are not afraid of accountability. Last summer, we created a dashboard, the ICUF dashboard. It's on the front page of our website. Just like the state university system, just like the Board of Governors has done for them and the state colleges. And I think under HB1, you guys are developing an online portal for families. In that dashboard, we have 1, 3, and 5-year earnings for every one of our programs, all of the metrics that we have to provide to the state, and then we have a net price tuition calculator that looks at what the true cost of tuition is in our sector, because every school in the ICUF sector discounts tuition. So that's another good example of how ICUF is stepping up to the plate with regard to accountability. This is a good deal for the taxpayer. You're producing BA degrees at about 7.5 to 1 return on investment. Given the investment, your ease is less than 1% of the higher ed budget in Florida. And in the public sector, when you use metrics, it's all incentive-based. And that's something we hope that you look at going forward. But I do want to thank the members. I do want to thank Chair Schoaf and Chair Mello and Representative Temple for working with us. We want to come up with accountability options that truly measure our institutions, and we appreciate it. Thank you for the time to speak, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, sir. Seeing no more public testimony, we are now in debate. Are there any members that wish to debate this bill? Rep. Escamani, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you so much. I know I already shared this with the bill sponsor, but I do have a college, an amazing college in my district, Rollins College, where students benefit from EASE. And though they're not necessarily directly impacted by the metrics established in this policy, there is concern among all of the private colleges and universities that these metrics just are not flexible enough to the uniqueness of every school. And so I look forward to seeing potential amendments to try to figure out what we can do to have that accountability while also not unintentionally harming about 3,000 students in the fall semester that are currently at risk if these current metrics as crafted go into place. So I'm going to have to be down on the bill today, but I'm very hopeful that can change as the conversations with our partners and stakeholders continue. But I appreciate you, Rep, for your flexibility and your openness and for all your work on this too.
Before we proceed with debate, there was a question for Mr. Boyd from Ranking Member Tant. If Mr. Boyd, if you would be willing to answer that question, I'll
thank you, Mr.
exercise my discretion to allow you.
Thank
to.
You. Thank you for that. Have you worked with the sponsor on these alternatives, and are you, you know, are you able to come up with any kind of language to address them?
We did meet with the sponsor and Chair Lee, and we do have some alternatives.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, you're recognized.
We did work with the sponsor. We did meet with the sponsor initially, and we do have drafted some alternative metrics that work for our sector. And I don't know if you've got that document, but we will get it to you, and we will continue to have those discussions. And he's had an open door for us, and we appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Any further debate? Any members? Ranking Member Tant?
I'm still Allison. So thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to voice, I'm very happy to hear that, and I'm very anxious for you guys to have a resolution to some of this. I'm concerned about those workforce students that can't finish in 6 years, and particularly those who do get called up to military service. So I'm going to be very anxious to make sure as we go forward that those kind of considerations are in the bill that you come up with. I'm going to be down today, but I'm going to very aggressively work to get you guys to a landing place for not just for the military students that I discussed, but and the other workforce folks, but for a glide path to help our schools be able to comply in a way that makes sense. But thank you for bringing the bill and for wanting good standards in place.
Thank you, Rep. Recognize Rep. Dunkley in debate.
Thank you, Chair. Rep. Temple, thank you for reaching out to me, and I'm sorry I wasn't able to get back to you. But listening to many of the stakeholders, you know, of the effects that this would have on them, And then just even listening to ICUF now, there is real concern. And then when we talk about my military people, you know, being a service member and understanding how transitioning that life is sometimes and not wanting to be part of, you know, something that will affect them. Today I'm going to be down, but I'm really glad that you're looking to work with ICUF to get something better, you know, so hopefully we'll see something that looks more in the sphere that a lot of people can benefit better from. Thank you.
Any further debate? Rep. Schoaf, you're recognized.
Thank you, and thank you, Rep. Temple, for filing this bill. I think it's a great bill. I know that you've had an open door. I'm encouraged that those that may have some issues with it have met with Chair Leak. I encourage them to meet with you directly as the bill sponsor and work with you on that. I do like so many parts of this bill. I believe that Florida taxpayers should not be subsidizing in any way, shape, or form students that are attending institutions and not turning out and getting a job and actually contributing to our workforce. I believe that we are, as the stewards of those taxpayer dollars, must be responsible for them. And yes, the dollars follow the student, but again, I do not believe we should be subsidizing students going to universities with graduation rates that low. Thank you again for running this good bill.
Thank you, Rep. Any further debate? Seeing no further debate, Rep. Temple, you're recognized to close on the bill.
Yes, sir. Thank you. And thank you for your attention today. Thank you for your consideration. I ask for your support for this bill as we continue to work and make it better. And we will continue to do that. Like I said, the door is always open. Look forward to getting more information about some of the unique situations that some of the schools find themselves in, and particularly finding maybe ways to either assist the schools in improving their data or finding ways to make sure it's an accurate representation. And with that, I close.
Thank you. Kendall, please call the roll.
Representatives Amnesty. Beltran.
Yes.
Burfield.
Yes.
Cross.
No.
Dunkley.
No.
Escamani.
No.
Esposito. Gonzalez-Pittman.
Yes.
Hawkins.
Yes.
Lopez.
Yes.
Placencia.
Yes.
Rudman.
Yes.
Schoaf.
Yes.
Tant.
No.
Temple.
Yes.
By your vote, PCS for HB 1247 is reported favorably. Congratulations. We'll now move to our last bill on the agenda, HB 459 by Rep. Giambardo, relating to education. You're recognized, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. I think I'm the last one, so we'll make this one quick for you. HB 459, what it does is it seeks to expand or to grow the workforce education by providing additional foreign language options, expanding the Department of Education's Bright Future advertisements sent to educators, parents, students, and including career and industry pathway options for eligible that are eligible for Bright Futures scholarship. And that is the bill.
Thank you, Rep. Are there any questions from members on the bill? Rep. Escamani, you're recognized.
Thank you so much, Rep. And actually, over the years, I've seen this, you know, computer science as a foreign language debate. I'm kind of neutral, honestly. So I'm curious, could you kind of give me your perspective and maybe the pros and cons, if you will, of that change, and why do you think it is a foreign language?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so this is adding it. So it's not just saying you can't take a foreign language anymore. It doesn't fit, but. You know, to be honest with you, I mean, a lot of times I don't even remember the foreign language that I took in high school. And if you look at lines of code, right, it is a foreign language. And so I think this is just an opportunity as computer degree or as computer coders and network engineers and all of those, we're starting to need more and more and more of those. And it's in everything that we do. So in order to help push that, you know, that industry, that's how we came up with that. So I do think it's relevant, and I think we have to start growing it.
Okay. And the follow-up, Chair, if it may?
You're recognized, Rep. Escomani.
Thanks, Chair. Thank you for that. Do we have enough educators in the school system to provide that option? Has that question been, you know, contemplated at all?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So yeah, last year we actually gave USF, I think it was about $20 million in kind of train-the-trainer educational dollars for like technology and computer science, those industries. You're right. We have to continue to grow that. But we have to kind of start somewhere. And I think, you know, what I hope to achieve with this is that, you know, we have to look at workforce education as post-secondary education. Not everybody's going to go to college. Not everybody wants to. But we're offering this, you know, great scholarship to anybody with, you know, for in-state tuition or in-state university. But we have nothing for really the workforce, for the somebody who just wants to go and, you know, work with their hands. And so that's kind of what I'm trying to achieve with that. And we're going to have to work on, you know, ways to, you know, scaling and building capacity amongst educators in some of these industries. So, but I do agree with you, but it's something that we've addressed and we're continuously working on.
Okay. And a follow-up, Chair, if I can.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you. Are there any high schools right now that already have a code class and are, you know, struggling with, you know, maybe interest or maybe they have a lot of interest and so, you know, does that already exist and those teachers already in place and adding it as an optional language maybe doesn't require a heavy lift, I guess is my question. Other schools already have that coding in place where you don't have to hire a new teacher, the teacher's already there. Maybe walk me through those examples if they exist.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's a great question. There actually are a lot of schools that have STEM programs that are teaching coding. There's tons of programs that a lot of educational institutions or charter schools and public education schools, they're already doing a lot of this. And some of the programs are so great that the teacher doesn't really have to know a ton about it because it's kind of a self-pace. I walked into a charter school in Boca Raton, A.D. Henderson, and they had kindergartners on coding programs, learning how to code. I was like, you know, more than I do. So it's a growing thing. And I think that the programs are getting so good that sometimes they're just really, the teacher doesn't really need to know as much about it in order to make sure instructed.
Okay. Follow up, Chair, if I can.
I'll allow one more because we do have some other questions, but go
okay.
ahead.
Okay. Thank you. Does your bill impact, I just remember taking, you know, 2 years of Spanish when I was at University High School. And then when I went to UCF, you know, part of the reasons to get, I believe at the time it was Bright Futures, was to have that foreign language competency. So does your bill, A, impact, like, any of those required eligibility for higher education? Like, if a university requires you take 2 years to get into, my assumption is when you redefine coding as foreign language, it just kind of is plug and play in that sense. But could you confirm that for me?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, so it would also say to the universities in the state of Florida that they have to take it as a substitute.
Rep, do you have more? I can come back to you, but I want to. Okay, I'll come back to you. Rep Cross, you're recognized. Did you have questions? Oh, you didn't. Oh, does anyone else have questions? Anyone? Okay, go. Rep Escomani, you're recognized. I'm sorry, I thought other people had questions. Go ahead.
No worries. Thank you. Plenty of ESCA questions. Okay. Just to the Bright Futures component real quick on, you know, covering the cost of what I interpret as private and apprenticeship programs. You know, would this mean that we're subsidizing private companies and their internship programs, or can you walk me through, what does that mean?
So
you're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So right now we have the RAPID system, which DOE already kind of certifies, authorized apprenticeship programs. So they will certify these programs, and apprenticeship programs are free. So that program in itself is free. The tools and the books and those things have a cost to them occasionally. So what this does, this will cover the cost of the materials and books and things like, and tools that a student would need to actually go into it. And some of the apprenticeship programs pay anywhere from $15 to $50 an hour in the state of Florida. So they're pretty robust, but yeah, so that would pay for like tools and things.
Okay. And then quick follow-up, Chair, if I can.
You're recognized.
So are there any examples right now, for example, of private companies that are already paying for those supplies that would no longer pay for supplies if we pass this, i.e. like we're subsidizing the cost for them? Because I'm just thinking like large companies that don't necessarily need a subsidy to do this.
You're recognized.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have that answer. I don't know if what some of them are paying for. I know like ABC and certain organizations have really robust programs, and they're always struggling and fighting for dollars at the local school districts to try to, you know, get some things paid for. But I don't think it's always paid for. I don't think the programs are always paid for. Okay. But I'm not sure about like the tools and things like that.
Okay. And then one last follow-up just so I understand, Chair, if I can.
You're recognized for one last follow-up.
Perfect. I'll take it. So when it comes to just the way Bright Futures works, you know, how would that, like, I guess, what would be the operations of that? Because, you know, usually it's like per credit hour. So does the, I guess, operationally, how does that work for the pay for supplies and things like that?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it actually, there's parts of it where it converts it to clock hours to cover that.
Any questions from anybody? Okay, we'll move into public testimony. We have some folks waving in support. We have Amanda Prater, Opportunity Solutions Project, waving in support. Looks like Edward Briggs has put in cards both for Florida Refrigeration and Air Conditioning Contractors Association and for the American Fire Sprinkler Association Florida chapter, both waving in support. And then we have Carol Bowen, who wishes to speak from the Associated Builders and Contractors of Florida. Ms. Bowen, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Sorry about that. We want to thank Representative Gia Lombardo for the bill. To answer a couple of questions that have come through, first of all, I think this is a wonderful bill because it's starting to get us to normalize workforce education. Talking about coding, talking about Bright Futures expanding its reach to workforce education, all of Florida is thirsty and hungry for our next level of skilled workforce. So this is a wonderful thing. And if you're having conversations with middle school and freshmen saying, there's a path for you, and follow it, and we're going to support you. You're ahead of the crowd as far as other states, so I want to thank you for that conversation. Representative, to your question, and it's an important one, there's a unique element, and I can only speak to construction apprenticeship, but I think that was your question. In order to be an apprentice, you have to be employed, and there's two elements. There's your on-the-job training, and then your classroom learning, and that's free to you, but you can... So you can't be an apprentice unless you're employed. But every once in a while, you're in an apprenticeship program, and maybe your employer lets you go, and you're looking for another employer to pick you up. At that moment, you can stay in the classroom portion of your education, but then the responsibility of the cost becomes yours. I think that $2,000 helps bridge that gap and helps us keep people in that classroom. You can always make up your OJT component on your next job, but otherwise we're kicking people in and out of apprenticeship programs if they can't afford that. So I think that covers that as well, and I just want to say thank you. So thank you.
Thank you. That concludes public testimony. Is there debate on this bill? Ranking Member Tant, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I love this bill. I work very closely with my technical college here that has a building trades component to it. And so I'm really glad to see that this is that workforce will be included in all of this, and I appreciate you bringing the bill. I'm up.
Rep. Escamani, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you. I just want to say thanks to answering those questions, because I was trying to operationalize that more in my head. So that does make a lot of sense to me. And so I will be up on the bill. And I really love students being able to learn foreign languages, as I think it's not just the language itself. It's also just the cultural experience as well. So I hope we can find ways to, you know, support students in doing all the above. But I understand the intent, and I think it's good. So thank you, Chair, for the flexibility with questions.
Is there further debate? Rep. Cross, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also have some similar statements as Rep. Escamani. I took Spanish class in high school and minored in it and spent two semesters abroad, not because I had to, but because I wanted to. My only hesitation with this is that it may defer some people from having that experience. And as we continue to be in a global economy, I think it's important that we have some literacy in other languages as well, but I do appreciate the problem you're looking to address and making sure that we are putting emphasis on our workforce training and education. So I will be up on the bill.
Is there any further debate? Seeing no further debate, Rep. Giambardo, you're recognized to close on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members. Thank you for all the questions and the testimony. And you know, again, we're not getting rid of foreign language. We're giving another option for some folks that may, you know, not look at foreign language as something that they exactly want in life or they feel they need. But thank you so much, and hope to get your support.
Thank you. Rep. Giambardo having closed, Kendall, please call the roll.
Representatives Amnesty. Beltran.
Yes.
Burfield.
Yes.
Cross.
Yes.
Dunkley.
Yes.
Escamani.
Yes.
Esposito. Gonzalez-Pittman.
Yes.
Hawkins.
Yes.
Lopez.
Yes.
Plasencia.
Yes.
Rudman.
Yes.
Schoaf.
Yes.
Tant.
Yes.
Temple.
Yes. By your vote, HB 459 is reported favorably. Members, that concludes today's agenda. Seeing no other business before the subcommittee, Rep. Schoaf moves that we rise. Without objection, the meeting's adjourned.